I'm a believer, I couldn't leave her if I tried. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer, not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love, and I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried.
Good morning. Hello, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
Together,
we're the Chris and Rob late night talk show,
where the topic tonight is
angels and aliens, baby.
UFOs. The phone number is 749-1444. The phone number's already ringing, even though Jim hasn't answered the phone yet.
You know it's a good night when the phone number's ringing.
Taking some calls here in a few minutes. In about 15 minutes, we're going to give a call to Keith Thompson, author of the book Angels and Aliens. What this book is about is an in-depth look at the history of UFO sightings and such. It's a comparison. In a brilliant stroke, Keith Thompson takes a subject usually confined.
Keep on reading, man.
Sensationalistic expose and reveals its surprising literary richness, intellectual energy, and symbolic depths. So stay tuned for that.
So how's your week been?
It's been fabulous, man. How's yours been?
It's been there.
Reds lost tonight with the new manager. Go figure that out.
Go figure. Browning's out in the fifth inning, throwing a shutout. They lift him. He's gone. What do you want? What are you doing? What's going on?
Nothing.
You're pushing on my chair like you were a man on a mission.
I thought you had a goal. I was just looking around, man. The plush studios here.
WAIF Cincinnati, the home of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, where it's 2:01 on this Wednesday morning. And what's going on with that?
I don't know. Hey, Jim!
There,
get your fat, dimpled ass back in here.
I think I corrected it.
Yeah, I guess
I'm Rob, co-host and engineer.
And I'm Chris, co-host and sex symbol of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Why is it still doing
that?
I turned that down.
Your duty. We're accepting applications here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show for position of engineer and phone answerer.
Screw your chair, man. You got work to do. Plus, that's my cup.
Why is it doing that?
My cup. We fixed that.
That's off.
That over there where it used to be. Come on, this is a professional outfit. We're even playing the WLW music behind us.
That's turned down as close as it is. Turned down all the way.
It's your microphone, Daddy-O. See? Yeah, maybe it's your headphones. Hey, the phone numbers are open here. 749-1444.
Troubleshooting
if
already.
If you could ask someone who knew everything there was to know about UFOs,
Hold on, what would you ask? Well, first of all, let's not pretend like our guest, Keith Thompson, knows everything there is to know about UFOs.
He knows a lot about it. He's done a lot of research, and his book includes every UFO story that ever was.
There's an enormous difference between knows a lot and knows everything. So, he's just one guy with one guy's opinion.
Uh-huh.
So let's not pretend like his is the word of God about UFOs, UFO sightings,
and angels and aliens. He's done as much research as anybody else has.
Granted, and that's what's kind of funny is, and then he spends the whole book saying that the research done on the subject is a lot of hooey. I like that word, a lot of hooey, just a lot of hot air, a lot of spilled ink, but mostly no in-depth scientific type studies. Either people come in with such preconceived notions one way or the other that the stories are always wrong and the studies are always incorrect. Do I read him right? Is that what you got out of the book?
What I got out of it was that he's trying to draw together all kinds of paranormal experiences, from UFOs to mythology to fairy sightings to unicorns to Greek and Norse mythology to ancient Hopi Indian writings to the appearances of the Virgin Mary, the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, tying it all together.
Does he tie together cats really kill people?
What do you mean cats really killing people?
2 weeks ago, last Tuesday, not yesterday, but the Tuesday before that, we'll get to this in just a little bit. Let's take Tim's phone call first of all. Go ahead, Tim. You're on with Chris and Rob and Jim.
How you doing?
We're doing pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Mike's a fag.
Mike. There we go. Mike, hey, Mike, you're a fag. Dig it, man.
But anyway, a couple weeks ago, Dear Abby devoted her whole column to letters from people saying that cats actually kill people.
You mean like house cats?
Like, yeah, house cats try to kill little babies.
You mean like Beaker?
They jump up on their chest and they suck their breath away from them and kill them. Remember that? Did you see the movie Cat's Eye?
With, no, I never saw it.
Well, you know, it's an old fairy tale, wives' tale, myth that a cat will try to kill a baby. And all these people wrote in Dear Abby and said, "That's true, Dear Abby. You're just an idiot if you don't believe it."
Cats kill babies?
I saw a cat try to kill my brother 65 years ago, and I remember like it was yesterday. He sat on my brother's chest, and he put his mouth right on my brother's mouth and nose, and he sucked all the air out of my brother. My brother was turning blue. My mom hit the cat with a broom.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Who is this?
Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? Oh, hey, I heard you're a fag.
That's total nonsense.
It must be. You know, I didn't think you were a fag.
On the subject of cats, me and my friend Jason were listening to Kiss's Hotter Than Hell backwards one day, and a cat jumped on him. A1 jumped on him.
Hold on, you guys are in, what, like your bedroom?
In the basement, just listening to some Kiss backwards.
And where'd a cat get in the basement?
He was down there.
Oh, it was your friend's cat?
No, my friend's got a lot of gerbils.
Oh.
But the cat jumped on us, or jumped on him. I think it has something to do with playing the Kiss Higher Than Hell LP back.
Hold on. I think it might have something to do with, was that the last album that Peter Criss was involved in?
No, it was one of the first to be a fact.
Well, to be a fact. So, but Peter Criss was with the band then, and as everyone knows, Peter Criss was, in fact, the cat person of Kiss.
Did they find him guilty on that murder charge?
Peter Criss? I didn't know he tried to kill him. What, he was up for murder?
No, they said something about molesting cats. Is that true?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all I had to say. I just had to go through my chest. I just had to tell somebody.
All right, well, we're glad that we could...
That's a paranormal experience for me.
Man, we're glad that we could be here for you.
Thank you much.
Thank you. 749-1444 is the phone number here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Nothing like a grateful caller to get the show off to a rip-roaring start.
Right on, and
that's
here we
way,
are.
That's the way we like to look at it. Okay. Dave. We got Dave on the phone. How you doing, Dave?
Pretty good.
That's good to hear.
What's on your mind tonight, Dave?
This thing about cats killing babies.
Uh-huh.
That's, it's because the baby has milk on its breast.
Uh-huh.
And the cat smells it. And it sits on the baby's chest and puts its mouth up against the baby's mouth.
And it's trying to smell that milk.
Right. So that's how they say it kills the babies.
Next thing you know, cat's trying to swallow the baby's head.
Well, no, they're just trying to get that milk, and they smell it, and that's why they say it kills the baby. That's why you got to keep cats away from the babies.
So if an adult ate a tuna fish sandwich right before it went to bed, a cat would jump on an adult's chest and smell the adult's tuna fish breath.
Yeah, try it.
Well, you know, I'm really not into having a cat that close to me.
Well, if you got a cat in your room and you've been eating tuna, that cat's going to be all over you.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I never thought of that. Thanks for your call.
All right.
Later.
We're glad that we could get to the bottom of this cat-killing baby thing. Mm-hmm. This controversy's been brewing for way too long.
Can't believe we're going to have a world-famous UFO researcher on and people want to talk about cats killing babies.
You're the one who brought it up.
What?
Cats killing babies.
No, I brought up UFOs. You brought
no,
up
No,
cats
you brought up
babies.
Like unicorns and fairy sightings and all that nonsense.
Yeah, I didn't say anything about
Did
cats.
Do you remember a couple years ago when the circus took a goat and they shaved its head and they stuck a horn on it and pretended it was a unicorn?
Yeah, I remember that. Well, you know, they can genetically breed those things now.
I did not know that.
Hello, Sound Commander. You're on the air.
Yes.
Hi, what's on your mind tonight, Mr. Sound Commander?
Well, I thought I had it right that you were going to have, what's his name?
Keith Thompson.
Keith Thompson on.
Author of the book, Angels and Aliens, An In-Depth Look at the UFO Experience.
As reported in today's Cincinnati Inquirer.
Do you think that UFOs are a conspiracy, that they're either created by the government or that maybe they are from outer space, but the government knows all about them and isn't telling us nothing? Project Blue Book, you know, all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Well, tell me what your thoughts on the matter are.
Well, I won't give you my thoughts, but I'll give you the facts.
There you go.
Or give us a question you have for Keith Thompson.
Well, go, the floor is yours, Sound Commander.
Is Mr. Thompson in the studio or what?
No, he's in his plush California studio apartment, and we're going to have to call him here in a few moments. But go ahead, we want to hear any comments or questions you would have for Mr. Thompson. We'll pass them along through us. You can vicariously talk to Keith Thompson.
Well, it's nice that he at least wrote a book on the matter, and unfortunately he takes a very non-committal stance on the matter, and seems to make it just seems to more or less muddy the waters more, when we really need to address what the real myths are in our society.
So you've read the book?
Yes, I have.
Oh my goodness! Someone actually read the book.
Yeah, there you go. That's professionality there. But
what do you think of the book?
Why don't you turn your mic on, Chris?
What'd you think of the book? Thanks, Rob.
Well, as I say, he doesn't clarify the issue at all in the book. He more or less serves the function of muddying the situation even further. And
on what grounds do you accuse him of this?
Well, if you read the book, you'll find that he gives you so much of the side of the debunkers, you know, and the debunkers are a small group of people who really are less credible than the UFO.
I'll tell you one thing I didn't like, that I didn't read the whole book. I'll be blunt. I'll be honest.
Yes.
I have no secrets from the listeners or
Thanks,
Chris.
Radio.
I didn't read the whole book. I read the first couple of chapters, and it seemed to me that right off the bat, every time he mentioned people who thought the government may be covering something up, he always referred to them in kind of derogatory terms, like they're raging paranoids.
Yes.
Well, it seems to me by now, if you don't think the government's covering up or has covered up different things in the past.
Yes.
The thoughts that I had upon reading the book is every time he'd bring up a specific case, he'd give one side of the story. He'd talk about the guy that saw the UFO and his supporters. Then he'd turn around and give the other side of the case. You know, he'd talk about...
This is the technique that's used in all our news and all our information sources. And it's very important that you understand that the CIA was formed originally to debunk the contact by UFOs. And that's the original intention of the CIA. And that's the intention of all the secret agencies in the government. In other words, to disinform the people, to cloud the issue, to... if you understand, this is the same sort of misinformation that's used throughout every aspect of our lives by large corporate entities which have been profiting and continue to profit by our ignorance, such as pharmaceutical companies, such as the medical profession, which is the real farce.
Johnson & Johnson,
modern medicine, modern science is such a farce and a joke that UFO believers seem like really logical, sensible people by comparison. In other words, if he wants to look into to where the real conspiracy is, the conspiracy, what would, if there was a huge governmental conspiracy, what would be one of their main techniques? It would be to ridicule anyone who stumbled on the
And that
truth.
Goes on, too, because anyone that talks about UFOs, immediately you think he's a crackpot, don't you?
Well, that's the thinking. And why is he a crackpot? Well, because he believes that he saw a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those of us who have seen them, I'm sure there must be some listeners out there.
My question is, what would the government's motivation in a cover-up be? Unless the government's actually flying these things in their top-secret military craft.
Well, I'll tell you what it is exactly. If you want to hear it right now, I'll tell you.
Okay, lay it on us, baby.
The motivation is this. The group of people who were called in into the original in 1947, in Arizona or in New Mexico, were the remnants of an extremely disgraceful and failed intelligence community within the United States military complex.
Are you referring to the Roswell UFO crash of 1948?
They brought in they run in this group of people who are highly antisocial, sociopaths, in other words, of the ilk of the J. Edgar Hoovers of the world, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Demented people who like secrecy because then they can cover and take pictures of men in bathrooms and stuff, you know? And
get saucy.
So these are the kind of people they called into this, and this is the group that has grown into the secret conspiratorial organization that has brought us such people as Richard Nixon, Lyndon Johnson, Ronald Reagan, and George Bush. These are the people they brought to us as our leaders.
And now, Michael and Janet Jackson.
Doesn't disgust anyone right there that these men gained the prominence of being our presidents. If that doesn't disgust you enough right there.
I tell you what, Sound Commander, let's add one more person to your list. Jim Bowden.
Who?
Jim Bowden. We got to go. It's time to call our good buddy, Keith Thompson. Thanks for your call, Sound Commander.
Well, listen.
We got to free up the line so we can give him a jingle.
Well, listen, one thing I want to tell you.
Go ahead.
I have some very important information for Mr. Thompson.
What would that be?
Well, I have some sources that he can check with that I notice he didn't come upon that are a little more obscure that might shed a lot of light on.
Well, what are they? Lay them on us.
Well, one is a group called LL Research out of Louisville, Kentucky, who have a series of books called The Raw Material. And Raw is an entity that explains a lot about the UFO phenomena. As well, there's other sources like the Michael Material, which is by the author Chelsea Quinn Yarborough. And these books are also available in most of your bookstores that have so-called New Age or occult sections. Mm-hmm. Particularly the LL Research group in Louisville, Kentucky. The book is phenomenal. And
they make some killer khaki shorts,
too. And it gives you some specific scientific basis and some theories that are just now being confirmed by a scientific community. And also you should ask Mr. Thompson about the fact that in Russia, where they take this sort of thing seriously, as any scientist would do if he weren't involved in a chaotic society which, like we have here, you'll find that in Russia, they actually used the scientists and the religious community and the so-called occult or paranormal community to have an exorcism on Red Square to rid their society of the negative and ghosts, say, of Lenin, Marx, Stalin, and the whole group, okay?
Okay.
And it's significant because it's very relevant to you and your families, and particularly your children, who right now, depending on how you react to this conspiracy by our secret government, will depend on whether or not your kid ends up on the end of a bayonet.
Okay, we got you covered, man.
Gotcha.
Catch you later. Okay, we'll be right back. The Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Trip, my supersonic ship's at your disposal if you feel so inclined. Well, alright. We're gonna travel faster than light, so drop your overcoat tight and we'll go anywhere you want to decide. Rocket ship, nobody has to be helped, nobody needs to be out of sight.
Oh, out of sight, man.
Nobody's gonna travel second class at the equality and no suppression of minorities.
Supersonic.
Titanic ships at your disposal if you feel so inclined. Alright. Nobody gonna travel second class. There'll be equality and no suppression of minorities. On a little trip. I'm a supersonic rocket ship.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
Together,
we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
And on the long distance telephone right now, we have from sunny Romana, California, Keith Thompson, author of the book Angels and Aliens.
How you doing tonight, Keith?
Good evening. I'm doing well. How about you?
Pretty good. It's good to have you here on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Thanks, and hello to all your insomniac listeners.
I'm sure they appreciate that greeting. Hey, okay, let's jump right into it. How did you get interested in things like angels and aliens and UFOs and all that wackiness?
Well, I didn't get interested in any of it because for the reasons that I think a lot of people do. I did not spend most of my formative years reading books about UFOs, and I didn't spend my years later reading books about UFOs. Instead, I came at it from the outside. I tried to write the kind of book about the UFO phenomenon that I would want to read. Specifically, I noticed that whenever there was a UFO sighting, from my own just observation from the news media, press and broadcast, that there would be, or print and broadcast, there were two sides on any UFO sighting. The people who saw the sighting and advocated for it were absolutely convinced something real had happened. The other side, the debunkers, were absolutely convinced nothing could have happened. And I noticed it got stalemated in this way, so I wanted to write a book as much documenting the controversy itself about UFOs as much to do that as to provide ultimate answers, because the phenomenon, as far as I'm concerned, eludes final answers. It's still very much an open question.
So your book is more or less a history of UFO sightings in America or the world, or
America and the world. I covered both. I did. I really chronicled the major sightings, the ones that those who were really on the inside, who follow the phenomenon very closely, will be familiar with many of the major cases, the Billy Meyer case in Switzerland, and cases all around the United States, especially those cases that helped form public opinion and led to major reactions. For example, sighting in 1966 in Dexter, Michigan, led to the formation of a civilian commission called the Condon Commission, that's with an N, not to be confused with the other term that sounds like that a lot these days, Edward Condon.
Better safe than sorry, you know what we're saying?
Yeah, but it's late night, so we can use these kind of generic terms. Anyway, so when the civilian commission came in and investigated UFOs, a whole new era began. So I tried to document those major sightings. But in addition to it being a history of the phenomenon, it's also an attempt to interpret the phenomenon at different levels, and we can talk about that tonight.
We had one caller a few minutes ago who criticized your book, said that you didn't always portray the con side of the story very well. He said that sometimes debunked that.
I would really, I'd be open to hearing. I wish he were on the air, he or she. I'd love to know specifically what. I mean, I'm really open to hearing that. But in general, I don't know. But I will say he's probably right in intuiting. It actually doesn't take much intuition. I made it pretty clear that I think there is a fundamental reality to the phenomenon. I think it has a physical dimension. I think it has an enormous effects on time and space in some way. I think it's clearly an advanced phenomenon in terms of our study of our knowledge of physics and psychology and religion. Beyond that, I don't line up with the hardcore pro ET hypothesis.
All right, well, here's just a point-blank question. Do you believe this planet has been visited by life forms from other planets and or galaxies?
I don't think so. I don't think the UFO phenomenon is definitive. I don't think they've come as UFOs. I just am not convinced that it could, you know, the UFOs could have an extraterrestrial origin, but that's simply not shown. You know, that's simply, there's very little that can be said about the origins is the question about which least can be said. What can be said is that there's a phenomenon that appears usually as apparently as an object or light in the sky, or less specifically in the immediate spatial environment of a witness or witnesses. The light affects both people and animals, also machines, turns off car engines, electromagnetic effects. It affects the physical surroundings in some kind of way, and then sometimes there's interaction between human witnesses and apparent occupants of these apparent craft. I say apparent because, for example, the saucers will often levitate above the ground like a hologram. The aliens will often get out and they'll be walking 1 foot above the air. Now, maybe that means they've just learned to levitate in our environment. It may also mean that they are quasi-physical. They're not exactly hardcore physical. And in that sense, that's why my book is called Angels and Aliens, because I say that some of the sightings, a good many of the sightings, actually have a whole lot in common with phenomena that are in various religious traditions, angels, demons, poltergeists, parapsychological phenomena.
You make a lot of comparisons in the book to a lot of other phenomena that's unexplained throughout history. What are some of those comparisons, and why did you make them?
Well, gee, that's kind of asking me to summarize the whole book.
In 25 words or less, please.
Yeah,
I told you we were going to start out kind of broad. We'll get into some real hard stuff
maybe
here.
Maybe you
in a
could
second.
Ask me about specific comparisons I make rather than the. The main one being there are phenomena in the Middle Ages and other times in history that have been called angels, for example. Now, this is not to say that what angels were in the Bible were really flying saucers from outer space. What I'm saying instead is that, you know, that mixes up two frames of reference. What we have is the angelic frame of reference, creatures, beings that are known variously as angels, demons, intermediate between us and God. That's what angels have typically been represented as. There are a lot of commonalities in terms of the behavior of angels, beings of great luminosity, great light, for example, that often bear messages. Well, UFOs appear in great beams and bursts of light, and the occupants of these apparent craft give various kinds of messages, some of it having a prophetic or religious dimension. So I'm just proposing that we may be looking at the same phenomenon, but because we're in a high technological space age environment looking for life beyond the planets, as humans really never did in times past to any significant degree, it may be that we're confronting a phenomenon which in religious times was given a religious interpretation, but in our time was given a technological interpretation, and the religious and technological interpretations may be entirely separate from some core phenomenon that is larger than those interpretations.
Do you feel that the... me and Chris both had a question at the same time. It's never happened before.
Stereo.
Wow. Do you feel that the government, by trying to show up people who see flying saucers as quacks and goofballs and loonies, do you think the government has perpetuated these sightings and even given credibility to people who see UFOs by their cover-up of the...
I absolutely do. In fact, if I were... I think it's pretty clear the government has... I'm not... On the scale of 0 to 10, in terms of 0 being not a conspiracy theorist at all, and 10 being somewhere to the right of Ross Perot and Oliver Stone, if you know what I mean, and William Cooper and fellows in the UFO world, I'm closer to the middle, which, you know, some people think means you don't take a stand at all. But I think the government, the military, knows of the existence of UFOs. They know that it has a physical reality of some kind that is pretty amazing. And they have some sense of what must be the awesome implications of this, including that they cannot control the appearance. They cannot control where the UFOs choose to make their appearance known. And there's been an agreement. And this is shown in the release of various documents, which my book did not get into as much, but there's an agreement in force to keep data quiet, partly, I believe, to discourage independent research. At the same time, ironically, when you look back at how the Air Force responded in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and so forth to UFOs, I can't imagine a strategy better designed to foster public interest, because the attempts to explain away sightings for which there was multiple radar, visual, ground and air observation, multiple evidence of something unusual. The attempts to explain these away were something absurd, like out of David Lynch, or we could go into some examples of that. But the bottom line, the attempts to explain them away were so absurd that it caused more news media coverage, and it fed the conspiratorial impulse, so that they ended up getting more attention for these explanations than they would have if they had said, well, you know, there might be something that we don't understand and we're going to look at it. I think that would have fostered less suspicion. By the way, let me comment. I'm thinking a little bit in the back of my mind about the caller who said that I was more critical of the con rather than the pro position.
Got under your skin, didn't it?
Well, yeah, it did, in the sense that one thing is that I tried to document that most UFO books don't. They tend to say, you know, the assumption is that there are UFO believers, true believers. They're the advocates. And then there are UFO skeptics who are good scientists. My view that I tried to develop in the book is that actually both the hardcore true believer, hardcore advocates and hardcore debunkers are different kinds of true believers. So I definitely did try to show that while a lot of the skeptics use the language of pure science, and use the language of being, quote, just skeptical, actually some of them are deeply committed at an ideological level and an emotional level to the idea that UFOs cannot be real.
Well, why is that? Is it for religious reasons? Or
I think it's a covert kind of religious. It's religious in the sense that the Carl Sagans of the world, for whom I have respect in the areas, I mean, Carl Sagan is a good science popularizer, and there's always value and benefit from someone who popularizes science. But the Carl Sagans who and others who have just set out to debunk this phenomenon, you could argue that there would be a psychological commitment on their part, at least unconsciously. I mean, these are the great avatars of science. These are the great, they have identified themselves, and they are the representatives of big science. They get all the big grants. They're in all the big universities.
They get all the chicks.
They get all the chicks and all the talk shows and so forth, and they get PBS specials and chicks. I mean, what a combination. So in any event, you'd think that, and they think that if there is extraterrestrial intelligence, it's going to come to them on radio signals through something called Project SETI. Well, Project SETI has been going for at least 20 years, or those various precursors of it. Guess what? Not a single shred of evidence has come their way. They're listening to something, and they don't get any response.
Actually, the truth is, I read the book that Frank Drake wrote about it called Is Anybody Out There? And
yes.
There are some documented cases of some blips that came through their radio telescopes that were unexplainable. They weren't stars or anything else, but they come so fast, and when these things scan the sky, they scan so fast and so much that when they actually find one, then they go back to look for it. It's been days since they actually saw it for the first time.
Well, good. That's a good point. I guess my best point, my more accurate response would be that actually what they do have some of then are anomalies. And that's what the UFO phenomenon is. It's an anomaly. It doesn't fit. I just am kind of saying that a lot of the representatives of big science, I think, are resentful on some level that all the action in UFOs is happening to ordinary people that they like to call Billy Bob in Little Rock, Arkansas, who lives near a swamp, and Betty and Barney Hill, who, by the way, you know, they're not trained in science, so why should we believe them? Well, let's just say if what happened to Betty and Barney Hill, of course, who were the two first most famous abductees, if it really did happen, maybe it didn't matter to the aliens or to these angels.
What did happen to Betty and Barney Hill? Because a lot of people are tuning in, haven't read the book yet.
Yeah, well, Betty and Barney Hill were were a couple. She is still alive. She's in her 70s, and he's now died. In the 1960s, they were driving along through the northern United States, through New England. They saw a light in the sky. They observed it from various angles and looked through their binoculars, and they continued to drive on. And at some point, they hit a bend in the road beyond which there was a very bright glow of light. And from this point on, you know, Steven Spielberg could probably take over. I mean, it's the kind of thing that special effects that he's created would describe. Barney got out of the car, went over the hill, stood on top, and began to say, Oh my God, I don't believe it. This can't be happening. And the next thing they realize consciously in the sequence is that they're in their car and they're driving home several hours later, and they're very confused. They don't have much memory of where they've been, and they have something called missing time. They weren't even sure at first that was the case. In the days that follow, they began to have memories, and then they got hypnotized. One thing led to another, and they filled in their missing time. The debunkers say they simply invented, you know, the missing time, and that's one of the questions. But in any event, what Barney saw when he was standing on the hill over the other side was a classic flying saucer rotating above the Earth.
Like, well, is it classic now because he described it as that?
No, it's classic. I use the term classic to repeat what I meant. You know, I use Spielberg. It's classic in what we now identify.
Well, so, yes, but was he the first? Did he set the standard?
Well, to some extent when I say classic, it was even classic then, in that there were the classic saucer that gives out light from different, it seems to be in a glow, an energy field. It seems to be a very high volume of energy. At the same time, it appears to be an object. It sort of oscillates between a material, physical state and being a kind of energy phenomenon that's sort of moving very, very fast, oscillating in between those two states. And it had portholes. That's a pretty common common response. You know, that's a good question, though. Which comes first? Did Hollywood put portholes on them and then we began to project? You know, we began to expect them? Or did Hollywood begin to put portholes on because that's what people saw? It's really hard to track it down. In any event, they were taken aboard a flying saucer by their own account and subjected to a kind of medical examination. And there have been really hundreds, if not several thousand of these reported by people throughout the world since. And it's a real messy phenomenon because now they are so widely publicized on these tabloid TV shows and so forth that it's very easy for the debunkers and even honest skeptics. I think there are many good honest skeptics to say, well, wait a minute. People report UFOs because they report these abductions because they have dreams that are strange and they think they've been abducted. So on it goes.
Do UFO sightings and other paranormal experiences that you discuss in the book, angels and visions of the Virgin Mary and such, do they come in cycles? Do they have a cyclical form, like where you get a bunch of them every few hundred years, or are they pretty steady throughout history?
They are. They tend to come in groups. It's almost like a kind of one of the researchers, a guy named Jacques Vallée, talks about it almost like a control system, like a thermostat. There are periods of intense UFO activity and periods of intense apparitions of a religious sort in particular cultures, and then these phenomena kind of die out, and it's just as in a, if you were doing a behavioral experiment with rats, you would, at some periods of the, there would be a periodic quality. You would increase the stimulus response, you would increase the rewards at some point, and then you would drop off and let the thing level off for a while, and then come back and train at a higher level. It's almost like the UFO phenomenon is doing that. Whether that's its intent, that's the effect. It comes in spurts, comes in cycles or waves, and then it falls off for a period. I think we're in a period now when it is relatively dormant compared to what it's been in the past.
What do you think it means, and do you think it has anything to do with the collective consciousness of humanity? In other words, is this signaling a change in consciousness where we're going to move up the evolutionary stage, or are we just having a mass hallucination?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be either one of those, but I think there is something about the phenomenon that it has an evolutionary quality to it. It is a global phenomenon, for example. It's been reported. Well, you know, even if it is a delusion, I'm totally open to that idea, then we would need to understand why it's happening with a certain consistency around the world, why it's being reported in cultures that don't have a history of reading about UFOs, they don't have TV shows. There's some very good sightings in Africa and other third world countries. So if it is a collective psychological phenomenon, then we would really then have a phenomenon that would require that we would expand our definition of the mind and psychology. If this is mental, then it has a collective quality. It's almost autonomous in that sense, and that would be in itself unique. So it seems to have some collective, I have a feeling about this, I can't show it, but it seems to have some collective implications, and whether some phenomenon is slowly coming into more view and it's slowly revealing itself is, you know, you can argue that, but then you can also look at the whole history of humanity as a very large arc, if you know what I mean.
Hey, while we were talking to you, we just got a call on the other line. It was from that guy that was criticizing you before we rang you up here
right.
This evening. And he said, and I quote, he wasn't criticizing your slant towards the con argument. He was just surprised that you have not become convinced by the overwhelming evidence. And I don't know what he was referring to. Do you have a reaction to that?
Oh, I'm convinced of the overwhelming evidence that UFOs are real, that there's a physical dimension. I mean, I stay very close to what the actual evidence shows, and I understand the difference between empirical evidence and theories about, and I think that a lot of people don't. So, for example, I think that there's a physical phenomenon. It affects consciousness in some extraordinary way. It goes beyond our science at this point. So I don't adopt the theory that it's purely a hallucination. There are some that are hallucination, but it represents a level of consciousness and physical interaction that we've not yet recognized. It's able to manipulate time and space and so forth. But, you know, that is not any more consistent with an extraterrestrial hypothesis, ultimately, simply because we don't know what something from outer space would be like. It's not any more consistent with an extraterrestrial hypothesis than it is with some of the more recent thinking in physics, in which the phenomenon could be a representative of some multi-dimensional reality of which, and it appears in our time and space. It makes its appearance in our time and space, but it ultimately doesn't originate in our time and space. So it could be multi-dimensional in a kind of twilight zone or parallel universe sense. It could originate from right here on Earth in dimensions that we haven't discovered. It could also, let me tell the caller, it could be from outer space. It could be extraterrestrial. But I don't think the idea, here's what I try to separate. UFOs can be real is a different hypothesis, is a different statement from their origin. It's too easy to assume UFOs mean flying saucers from outer space. I mean, they may ultimately be that, but they could be real and not from outer space. And that's a kind of a hypothesis that most people find pretty new. But I just like to separate the two, even though ultimately it could be from outer space.
That gentleman had two questions he wanted me to ask you. And I'm paying some attention to that guy because he claims to have read your book.
There was someone out there in Ohio who had.
And well, there's two or three of us now. He wanted to know, have you ever heard of the LL Research in Louisville, Kentucky Raw Material Series?
No, I have not.
I don't know anything about it myself. He also wanted to know what your opinion of, or if you knew anything about Russia's treatment of UFO cases.
Well, yeah, they did a whole lot. The Soviet apparatus, which is no longer in existence, of course, did respond in a very similar way as far as the evidence I've looked at, in terms of there's nothing going on here, this can all be explained. And yet there was an enormous interest, and in some ways even more quasi-official research into UFOs than our government permitted or encouraged or let on, although it's getting more and more clear that there's been a pretty high level of consistent interest in UFOs in the United States. So Jacques Vallée is a researcher who's much more in since I finished my book, more of the developments have come out in Russia, and he has covered that in his book, the most recent one, which I think is called I can't think of the name of it. In any event, there's a lot of interest in UFOs in the Soviet Union, and there are some good in Russia, and there are some very good sightings.
What's your next book going to be?
I'm doing a very different kind of book. I'm doing a book on trying to write a chronicle of the impact of Eastern religion and Eastern psychology on the Western mind during this century. No one has really written about the impact of the meeting of the East and West as such, and I'm going to try to take that on.
Well, the Beatles wrote some songs about it, didn't they?
They sure did.
You going to get into Brian Wilson and John Lennon in that book?
Will I be writing about them?
All the guys that used to hang out with the Maharishi?
Yeah, that actually at a level of popular level, that is one of the big trans what shall we call it not transitions but a kind of threshold. I mean, when Maharishi became famous through the Beatles, it at one level was pretty simplistic and it was made to look pretty silly by the press, but it was indicating something else that was going on, and that was more and more Americans were becoming interested in Buddhism, in...
Mooneyism?
In what?
Moonies?
I don't understand that word.
Moonies.
Mooneyism. Yeah, that's not technically an Eastern religion. That's actually, well, depending on who you ask. He considers himself a Christian, Reverend Moon. He just happens to be an Asian one.
Well, let's get back into this, but since we're talking about religion, let's talk about the Virgin Mary for a minute. You bring her up in the book a few times, and you even discuss, I think, the Fatima sightings.
Yeah, that's pronounced Fatima.
Fatima, there you go.
In Spain.
What's the attitude of the Catholic Church on visions of the Virgin Mary, and how do you connect it to the UFO phenomena?
Well, the Catholic Church is a tradition that's very open to, is a tradition that's very open to a whole range of prophetic